my ass, Steve.
Oh, really? Yeah, good.
We got really dense for a guy. Long underpants, long johns on.
Okay, Rabosei, so I just, as an introduction, I'll mention five topics that we hope to cover in the perek that we're about to start, the third perek of Sanhedrin on Daf Chav Gimel. The first topic is, how do we set up a Bezdin? And do the litigants have the right to choose their judges? The second issue is, let's say one of the litigants accepts a judge upon him, can he then change his mind? The third topic of our limud is going to be, who is kosher as a dayan and who is posel? Then we're going to have a fourth discussion about edus, about witnesses, who's kosher to testify, who's posel to testify. And finally, the last topic that we'll cover, Mirza Shem, in this perek, is in what scenarios, under what conditions, would the litigant be allowed to somehow reject the final decision of the Bezdin? Are there any situations in which he can say, you know what, even though Bezdin has issued their verdict, nevertheless I have new evidence, and I want to introduce the evidence in such a way that now Bezdin will change their mind?
All right. The second one?
The second one we said was, can the Baldin, even after he accepts one of the judges as his judge, can he rescind and revoke his acceptance? So once he's accepted it, it's irrevocable. All right, I'm just mentioning this so you get a little bit of an overview of what kind of topics we're going to believe to cover in this perek. So let's begin the perek. The Mishnah first records a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And the machlokes is about how to set up a bezdin in Dine Momenos. Now, when we talk about Dine Momenos, then we can talk about what's called hodos and halvos, which means if I have a monetary claim against you and you seem to have admitted that you really owe me this money, halvos means if I claim that you borrowed money from me. There's another category which is called gzelos and chavolos, which means that there's an accusation against someone that he's a thief or that he damaged someone's body, assault. And in those cases, called gzelos v'chavolos, we may need a whole different set of rules and regulations that govern the makeup of a bezdin, and that's called mumchim. Our mission is not working within the context of mumchim. Mumchim are smuchim that had smicha, ish mipi ish, in an unbroken chain that dates back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not our discussion in our Mishnah. Therefore, it would make sense to say that our Mishnah is focused on what's called hodos and halvos, which are the more classic cases of monetary claims. And here we have a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The first shita is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, Dini Momenos Bishlosha. We know that a bezdin for monetary decisions has to be made up of three judges. And how do we go about setting up this bezdin? Which judges can impose their decision on the litigants? Maybe the litigants don't want to go to a certain bezdin. Or maybe one litigant objects to the case being brought in front of so-and-so as a judge. So the Mishnah is looking for the fairest way of setting up a bezdin. And this is called Zeh Borer, which is actually the name of our chapter. Zeh refers to one baldin, we'll call him Ruvain. Borer lo echad. He chooses one. Now the Gemara doesn't know what the word one means. I'm going to give you the final maskon of the Gemara, and that is that one means one judge. The Gemara is not sure about that, but we'll see that soon. Vizeh, and we'll call him Shimon, the other litigant. Borer lo echad. He chooses his dayan. Ushneim, and now together, the two litigants, Reuven and Shimon, will agree, Borim lahem o dayan. They will agree upon a third judge. So that each litigant gets on the one in his preferred judge. And it would seem at this stage in our discussion that once Reuven has chosen his judge, Shimon cannot object. But where do Reuven and Shimon both have veto power? That's when it gets to the third judge. Reuven can choose his judge, Shimon his, and then together as a joint agreement, they will choose a third judge. That's according to Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim rejected the Shita of Rabbi Meir. They don't understand why is it that the Bali Dinim themselves are, shall we say, empowered or authorized to choose the third Dayan. They think that Shnei HaDayanim Borel Lehem Orecha, that the two judges, once they've been appointed to this court, Reuven appointed his judge and Shimon his, those two judges now will choose a third judge that's acceptable to them. They don't even have to notify the litigants at all. That's the sheet of the Chacham. The Chacham don't understand why Rabbi Meir allows or authorizes the Balei Dinim, the Reuven and Shimon, the litigants, to, why does he empower them to decide on the third judge? That should be the decision of the court. The court is made up of two judges. It has to be made up of a third judge as well. The court itself, the two Dayanim, say the Chacham, they will choose a third Dayan. So we're going to have a long sugya in the Gemara to try to figure out why Rabbi Meir says, no, it's the litigants that have the right to choose the third Dayan. And by the way, it could be, again, just keep this in the back burners, this is right now, it's classified information, it could be that even Rabbi Meir agrees that it's really the two judges that will choose the third judge. What Rabbi Meir only meant to say was that each one of the litigants has a veto power to decide that third judge is not acceptable. But the real choice, the process of making a decision, who will be the third judge, is really in the hands of the two judges, even according to Rabbi Meir. That's a possibility. So that's the Reisha of our Mishnah. Now the Seif of our Mishnah goes on to discuss the following question. Does the Baldin, does the litigant, have the right to object to a judge who was acceptable in the eyes of his adversary, of his contestant, of the other Baldin? And the Mishnah says, yes, there's a veto power here, at least according to Rabbi Meir. And he says, Zeh posel dayono shel zeh, v'zeh posel dayono shel zeh. In other words, according to Rabbi Meir, each one of the two Balei Dinim is equipped and upgraded to the status of a veto power. And he can decide that, you know what, I don't want to be judged by your judge at all. I mean, if that be the case, then we're going to have to raise the following question. According to this Shita, which the Mishnah identifies as Rabbi Meir, that Zeh posel dayono shel zeh, Zeh posel bayono shel zeh, if we would apply that straight through, even to the first two dayonim, so then it's a little bit odd. What does it mean, Zeh borer? What do you mean, Zeh borer? It's not really Zeh borer. You need the approval of the other litigant, so that the first two judges that are assigned to the court would seem to have the same exact status as the third judge. There's no difference between the third judge and the first two, because now we're assuming that even with regard to the first two judges, the litigants both together have to agree mutually on those judges. Correct. So, you know, right, yeah, the Halavite should only be the third, right? But what he's saying is that we have a problem. And the Chachamim say no. Amosai, there is only one, shall we say, exceptional case, a rare kind of scenario, in which the litigant is granted veto power. Amosai, when does he have that power? Bizman shemevi aleihem raya shehem krovim opsulim. The burden of proof would be upon him, let's call him Reuven, to prove that Shimon's choice of a Dayan is invalid because there's proof, there's evidence that Dayan that Shimon appointed is somehow related to one of the two Balei Dinim, or he might be possible for another reason. Why would he be possible for another reason? So the Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos says that it could be that he violated some sort of an Avera, so you would need two witnesses to testify that this Jew is chay of malchus for eating chazer, or is chay of kares for having a bi'ilah sura, or anything worse than that. Perhaps they could prove with two witnesses that he stole some money, embezzled some money. There are many different psulim that come under avera. Avera means a violation. Avolim hayuk sherim, but if there's no evidence to establish any sort of psul, whether it be kurvo or avera, in these judges, is eino yochel. I'm skipping a few words. Eino yochel leposlam. It's not up to the whim and the feeling of the baldin to say, you know what, this judge is unacceptable. If there's no objective evidence, then you can't just come along subjectively and say he's unacceptable to me, according to the Chachamim of Rabbi Meir. So in effect, according to the Chacham, there really is no veto power that's granted to the Bali Din. All they would have is the ability, which anyone really has, to challenge the kashrus of the Dayan. Is this Dayan really on the up and up? And the burden of proof would be on them to try to bring evidence to establish that the Dayan is not kosher, he's not acceptable to din. Now there's another situation in which the Chachamim say that we accept the Dayanim and we assume, in the absence of any proof to the contrary, that they are acceptable. And those are called Mumchim Mipi Bezdin. Which means, and this is how Rashi, back on Daf Beis Amud Beis, explains a Mumchal Pi Bezdin, Shenismechu Lahora Al Yidei Bezdin, that Bezdin gave them a certification, a Hora, and that's called Smicha, and in such a case, once again, they have a Chezkes Kashrus. So the question we're going to address later on is, why did the Chachamim have to indicate two different categories? They said, Hayuk Sherim o Mumchim Ipi Bezdin. What was the Adifus, what was the special surplus power here of a Mumchim Ipi Bezdin? You've already established that if the Dayanim are assumed to be Ksherim, because we have no reason to cast the shadow of a doubt on their Kashrus, then that's enough to validate their and confirm their stature as part of the Bezdin. Why did you have to add Mumchim Ipi Bezdin? Now finally we get to the Sefer of the Sefer, which is the last piece in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah establishes that can a Baal Din possibly aid them that are brought by his adversary, what word can I use? The tzadche kenegdo. Do we have a phrase for that in English? I don't want to use the word adversary. It's a little bit too strong. I thought one of you gentlemen who have an English translation would see some sort of word that indicates the other litigant who's either the defendant or the plaintiff. Anyway, whatever it is, we'll find a word. I'm sure there's a word in English for it. And the Mishnah says the following: Zeh posel edav shel zeh, v'zeh posel edav shel zeh, divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, if you take Rabbi Meir at surface level, he seems to be saying something that's totally unacceptable, and that is that if let's say you are the other Baal Din and you bring edim, I can say I don't want to accept those edim. What do you mean you don't want to accept those edim? Who asked you? What? Who appointed you to be in the driver's seat that you could decide whether the Eidim are Ksherim or not? And the Chachom say, no. Amosai, when can you decide that you don't want to accept Yenim's, his Eidim? That's only Bizman Shemevi Aleim Raya. He has to prove that these Eidim are disqualified. Either they're Krovim, or they're Psulim, they did some sort of an Avera, as we mentioned earlier. Avalim Hayu Ksherim, if we have every reason to believe that these Eidim are Ksherim, they have a Cheskes Kashrus, there's no one who has any proof against them, any Yochel Poslam. He can't just say, well, I don't want to accept your Eidim. So here's where we really get stuck with Rabbi Meir. So basically the Mishnah has a triple header machlokas. Always it's Rabbi Meir against the Chachamim. The first machlokas we understand, at least partially, and that is that Rabbi Meir insists that each one of the two litigants will choose a dayan. Now, once they've chosen each one a dayan, now they have a right as a group, so to speak, as a joint effort to choose the third dayan. So whereas Reuven will choose his dayan, and that's the discretion of Reuven, Shimon his, then the two Balei Dinim, according to Rabbi Meir, will jointly decide on the third dayan. Chacham say no, it's the dayanim who will choose the third dayan. That's machlokas number one. The second and the third machlokas puts Rabbi Meir in a very strange light. Rabbi Meir says that each litigant could knock down the dayan of the other litigant. He has veto power. And Chacham say, well, how can he do such a thing? I mean, does he have any objective evidence to prove that this dayan is possible? And in the third machlokas, Rabbi Meir says again something that seems to be untenable, and that is that the Baal Din could knock off the aid and say, I don't want to accept these aidim. What do you mean you don't want to accept these aidim? Who asked you, me samcha, that you have the right to say that these aidim are unacceptable? Did you bring any proof, as the Chachamim say, to establish that they were psulim? So now the Gemara is going to analyze the first machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The Mishnah says, Ze borer lo echad. What does that mean, echad? What does the word echad mean? And the Gemara initially understands, not the way we understood it, that echad means bezdin, that the subject of the Mishnah is not how to get together three judges that will comprise a bezdin. That wasn't the issue of the Mishnah. But rather the Mishnah is, which bezdin should we go to? Who gets the rights, or how do we organize it that each Baal Din has, you know, we protect his rights to choose the Beis Din that he wants to go to? Now, again, when you choose the Beis Din you want to go to, that could be for many, many different reasons. Some could be more technical because of the location, you don't want to schlep to a far off Beis Din. Others can be more substantial because you think that this Beis Din is a more clever Beis Din. It's made up of more chachamim and has a great track record. Or it could possibly be even that you think that that Beis Din will be more sympathetic to your cause. Now that sounds a little tricky. You know, what do you mean? You want to go to a certain Beis Din because you think they're sympathetic. I mean, what happened to honesty and truth? Well, it's more complicated than that, Rabosai, because certain Batei Dinim have certain traditions that were created by their giant Chachamim, the Dayanim that served on that basin over the course of maybe decades or even longer periods of time. Like, for example, here in Israel, I'll give you an example where you might not always want to go to a certain Beis Din. I'm not going to mention the name of that Beis Din, because if, let's say, you don't have absolute proof with two kosher witnesses that so-and-so owes you money, Beis Din is going to throw the case out. And once that Beis Din of that stature throws it out, the secular courts here in Israel will not take on the case. So there's no question that in a secular court, in litigation here in a secular Israeli court, you would win the case. You have ample evidence. But that evidence doesn't fit the bill of a certain kind of a Beis Din. So the other litigant says, well, I don't want to go to a secular court because he feels he's going to win in a Beis Din. So he's going to get you to sign a document that you're willing to go to in a Beis Din. Because how could you be a religious Jew and not agree to go to a Beis Din? But you don't realize necessarily that once you sign that document, that's it. You can never go to a secular court. So there may be all sorts of different reasons why a person would choose one Beis Din over the other.
Before, we talked about if they were from different Shvatim, they would go to one from their Shevet. Would that...
Right, that would also kick in. Yeah, let's say I belong to one Shevet, you're my litigant, you belong to a different Shevet. Which Beis Din are we going to go to? Because every Shevet has its own Beis Din. So the Gemara says, "My, what does it mean, Ze borer lo echad? That each one of the litigants chooses one. One what? B'zebar lo echad." So the Gemara thinks that what it means is that each litigant will choose a Beis Din. Now, this is strange, because if each litigant is choosing his Bezdin, then it means that he chooses these three judges that make up a hair cave, that's the makeup of a court. So after Reuven chooses his three judges, Shimon chooses his three judges, and then together they choose another Bezdin of three judges. And it's going to turn out that now the Bezdins have nine judges to it. Bitlasa sagi, but the halacha requires no more than three judges. So how could it be that Reuven is going to choose his three judges, Shimon is going to choose his three judges, together they're going to choose another three judges, and all these judges are going to sit on the same court, and that's going to make up a bezdin of nine judges? We've never found that the halacha requires a bezdin of nine judges. So now the Gemara says, Hachikomer. It doesn't mean that each litigant chooses three judges and then we're going to add up all these judges, but rather it means Zeborlo Bezdin Echad. He chooses the Bezdin that he wants to go to. Vizeborlo Bezdin Echad, and he chooses the Bezdin of three judges that he wants to go to. And now it turns out that the second Baldin rejects the Bezdin that the first Baldin prefers, and vice versa. And the Mishnah establishes that neither one of these two litigants can force and compel the other one to go to that bezdin of his choice, because the other litigant objects, he doesn't want to agree. But rather, says the Mishnah, Shneim borum lehem od echad. But rather, they're going to have to think of a third bezdin, which is acceptable to both of them. So again, at this point in the development of the Gemara thinks that the word Echad means a Bezdin. It doesn't mean a Dayan, a single Dayan, but rather it means a Bezdin.
And when the one litigant hustles the Bezdin of the other and vice versa, they don't need good reasons?
According to Rabbi Meir, they don't need good reasons. This is just not the Bezdin of my choice. How are they going to agree on a Bezdin of their choice? That's going to be a headache, but somehow they're going to have to come to an agreement that this is the Bezdin that we want to go to, and it's mutually acceptable. That's how the Gemara is interpreting our Mishnah according to Rabbi Meir. The Gemara later is going to change its mind, and the word Echad means Dayan Echad. So the Gemara now asks two questions, raises two objections to this concept that each litigant is going to disqualify the Bezdin of the choice of the other litigant. Because the Mishnah says it in a way that it applies to any two litigants. Now, remember that we spoke about a case called Halvos. So Reuven says, I lent you $1,000, and Levi says, I paid you back $1,000. That's called Halvos. So Reuven is the malve, what's it called in English, a lender, and Shimon is the borrower, he's the love. And now Shimon says, you know what, I don't want to go to your bezdin, he says to the malve. Like a certain chutzpah, he says, yeah, you did me a great favor, you lent me $1,000, but I'm not going to go with you to your court, I want to go to my court. So the Gemara objects, based on a statement of Rabbi Loza. The Gemara says, "V'afilu lova motzi ma'akev." The Mishnah doesn't qualify. It seems that any litigant has this veto power, and he says, "I don't want to go to your bezdin." And that means that even the lova, Shimon, who is the borrower, he also has the right to say, "I don't want to go to your bezdin." How could that be so? Ha'amar Abu Lazar. Now this is a sugya later on Daf Lamed Aleph, which is the beginning, I think. Oh no, it's actually at the end of this perek, and Rabbi Lozor is commenting on a statement of Amemar, one of the Amoraim, that if a Baal Din wants to go to a certain Bezdin, then we can force the other Baal Din to join him and go to that Bezdin. And says Rabbi Lozor, what did Amemar mean when he said that one Baldin could compel the other Baldin to go to his Bezdin? Lo shanu ela malve. That's the malve, who we called him Reuven, who was the lender. He decided he wants to go to a certain Bezdin. Then he could force the love to show up in that Bezdin. Avolove, but the love doesn't have the right to reject and veto that Bezdin. Kofenoso v'don b'iro. We can force him, and he's going to have to go to that bezdin. Again, we're going to have to see what that word b'iro means, and we'll get back to that in just a second. But in terms of choosing the bezdin, who has the upper hand, says Rabbi Lazar? Which one of these two litigants could compel the other litigant and drag him into his court, the court of his choice? I'm saying, which one has superior status, has the, what word should I use, the sovereign rulership to determine the bezdin? Oh, the lender. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said the lover. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said the lover. Yeah, let's call him the malva, if you don't mind. Okay, just so, you know, lover and malva sound very different. Now, this is based on a pasuk in Mishlei and a sugya later on in the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph called Eved Love Leish Malva. That's a pasuk in Shlomo Melech in Mishlei, which means that the love who borrowed the money is subservient to the malva. And the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph on the Beis explains, based on this pasuk, that the love has an inferior position. He was the one who took money from the malva. He's, so to speak, mishubad. He's like an eved to the malva. And it expresses itself in the following way. The malva has no right to demand anything from the lova other than repayment. But what he can do is, in any case of some sort of dispute between the malva and the lova, he, the malva, has rights to decide where that case will be adjudicated. In other words, he will determine which bezdin. Now, it's very interesting because, let's say the malva lives in a far-off city. The lova is going to have to schlep to that bezdin, and it's going to cost him money, you know, in transportation fees. And the Gemara is going to discuss there, who has to pay for those transportation fees? Does the lova have a right to turn to the malva and say, I want to bill you for the hotzas haderech? And if you don't pay me for the hotzas haderech, how do you expect me to repay the loan that you claim I owe you? And im kenk shekibel b'chazoras hamona shehalove lo yishar klum biyado, he says the following, that if the malva wins the case and the lova ends up penniless because he pays for this loan, which he claims he repaid, but he doesn't have enough proof for that, then not only is he penniless, but he has to come up with additional funds to pay hotzas haderech. So that's the subject of a sugya later on. In other words, if you're telling me that the malva he's the master and the lova is the eved, and therefore the lova has to schlep all the way out to the bezdin of the choice of the malva, which might be far out, you know, you're imposing another financial responsibility on the shoulders of the lova. He's going to have to pay the hotzas haderech, and that's something that the Gemara is going to analyze there. Now, if the Gemara's logic here, that one litigant can compel the other litigant to go to a certain bezdin, is based on the pasuk Eved Lova Lish Malva, then in other cases of Tovea V'Nitva, where it's not a Malva and a Lova, or for example, in a case of a Chavola, let's say, where Reuven claims that Shimon damaged his property or his body, then there'd be absolutely no difference between the Tovea and the Nitva, between the plaintiff and the defendant. We only make that distinction in the very narrow slice case of Halvos, where there's a Malva and a Lova. So what would be a situation in which, in any case, not a Malva Valova case, a regular classic Tovea V'Nitva, let's call it Chavolos, that one of the two litigants would be able to compel the other litigant to come to that bezdin? Because if you remember, Amemar made a statement that Kofin es abaldin sheni leleches ladun sham. What is that bezdin that has a superior status, and one of the two litigants, we'll call him the Tovea, call him the Nitva, it makes no difference, can force the other litigant to go to that bezdin. So that's called, in the language of the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph, Makom Hava'ad. I should really write this on the board. Makom Hava'ad. Now, the Makom Hava'ad is a place where there are many Talmidei Chachamim. Here, the Baal Din, whether it's the Toveh, the Nitva, is justified to say, I want to take this case to the Beis Hava'ad. As we said before, a place which is occupied by many scholars. Why? Because his logic is that a person will be embarrassed to fabricate and to deny a claim that he really owes money, and he's going to deny it. He's going to be embarrassed to do so and lie in front of Talmidei Chachamim. And that's called the Beis Hava'ad. So it comes out now that according to this understanding, if Reuven or Shimon, and we're not talking about a Malv and a Lova, one of the two litigants, Reuven or Shimon in any case other than Halva, decides, let's go to the Makom Avad, which is a higher class Bezdin. You know, it's like in America you have lower courts and higher courts. What do you say?
Supreme Court.
So one of the two litigants says, let's go to the Supreme Court. Because there's chachamim and dayanim, and you'll be embarrassed to say that you don't owe me money, or that you'll be embarrassed to claim that I do owe you money when I don't owe you money. You know, whether it's the toveh or the nitva. So that's called the Beis Hava'ad. So let's keep in mind as we go through this sugya that we're talking about Beis Hava'ad. Under what circumstances can one of the two litigants force the other to go to a certain bezin that's not a Beis Hava'ad? That's only in the case of a Malva V'lova. And that's called Kofen Oso V'Don B'Iro, which means that the Malva could force the Lova to show up in a bezin that's in his city referring to the Malva, and that's the local bezin, which means that he can force the Loveh to make that schlep, as we said before, and then we have to talk about the Dmei Hotzos HaDera. Now, there's a Rashi here, Dibra Maskel Ella. See if you can find that Rashi. Rashi says the following, that the reason why the Malveh has the right to force the Loveh is because since we already have a precedent where one litigant can compel the other litigant, and that's called the Beis Hava'ad, so that we can extend that to apply in the context of Eved Lova Lish Malva to the Malva's rights to force the Lova to come to his meaning the Malva's local best, because the Lova is seen as the Eved to the Malva. So now let's go back to our Mishnah. We suggested that Zeh Borer Lo Echad means that one of the litigants could force the other one, I'm sorry, one of the litigants could decide that he wants to be judged in a certain place. Then the other litigant has veto power and he can object. And that seems to apply in our Mishnah unqualitatively, straight across the board, even to the case of a Malva V'lova. So the Gemara says, well, that's against Rav Elazar. Because Rav Elazar says, Eved Lova Lish Malva means that the Malva could compel the Lova to come to the Bezdin of his choice, even if it's in a far-off city. So how can the Mishnah say that each one of the litigants has a veto power? So the Gemara says, you know what? I can answer that question. If that's your only objection, I have a solution. Kida Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says later on in the Gemara, when the Gemara says, how could it be possible that a Baal Din could say, I disqualify your judges? And that was Rabbi Meir's opinion that we said was untenable. It doesn't make any sense that each litigant is empowered to disqualify the judges or the judge that was brought by the other litigant. He has no objective evidence to prove that the judge is disqualified. So Rabbi Yochanan says that the only way of understanding and justifying the position of Rabbi Meir is ba'archos shebesuria shanu. Now in Surya, I don't know why this is not Lashon Hara, but the Gemara says that in Surya the Batei Dinim were not Bekiyim B'din Torah. They really didn't know the Torah law. And those Archos, those Batei Dinim, even though they were Jewish courts, were not reliable. And therefore, Rabbi Meir insists that the Baldin, each one, has a right to say, I don't accept that Bezdin. What do you mean you don't accept that Bezdin? Do you have any objective proof from witnesses or so forth that those judges are disqualified, that they ate a chazer treif, or that they're related to one of you? No, the answer is because the status of Archol Shebesuria is such that we question the, you know, even the basic level of knowledge that's required for Dayan in the case of Archol Shebesuria. And as a person who sits on a Bezdin in these Archol Shebesuria might be a total Amoritz. He really doesn't know the laws of the Torah. And therefore the Baldin, either one of them, would have veto power. And if that be the case, then let's use the same interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan to justify our Mishnah. What was your problem in our Mishnah? How could it be that the Lova could object to the Bezdin of the Malva? After all, Eved Lova Lish Malva. The answer is Barchol Shebesuria Shanu. That the case is where the Dayanim do not have the Bekius, the knowledge of Din Torah. And therefore even the Lova, who's an Eved to the Malva, has a right to object and veto the choice of such a Bezdin, which is made up of Eino Bekiyim B'Torah. Avol Mumchim. But if we have a Bezdin that's made up of experts, even Rabbi Meir would agree that the he doesn't have a right to say, I don't want to go to that Bezdin, or I think that those Dayanim are apostle, they're invalid. Now the Gemara offers a second answer. How could it be that the Lover could decide he doesn't want to go to the Bezdin that was chosen by the Malva? Rav Papa Amar Afilu Tema Mumchim. Even if the choice of the Malva was for a Bezdin of Mumchim that are very, very well versed in the Torah law, nevertheless, there is a scenario in which the Lover could object to go to that Bezdin, even though it's a Bezdin of Mumchim. And why is that? Kegon Beidina Derav Huna Uderav Chizda. Let's say there are two excellent Batei Dinim in the same city. One we'll call the Bezdin Rav Huna, and the other is called the Bezdin of Rav Chizda. Now, let's say that the Malve is closer to one of those two Batei Dinim. Let's say you're in a large city, and Rav Huna's Bezdin is to the north, and that's where the Malve lives, and Rav Chizda is to the south. And that's where the Lova lives. Deka Amar Le, the Lova in this case has a right to turn to the Malva and say, Mika Metrachina Lach, is this such a terrible tircha that you have to schlep from here, you know, from Eilat to Metula? That's not what I'm asking you. It's not so far away. We're all in the same city. And if we're in the same city, my preference is for the Bezdin that's in my locale, call it the Rav Chizda Bezdin, and you, the Malva, despite your superior status, you have no right to force me to your Bezdin of Huna up in the north. Now, here there's a very important comment of Tosus Dibra Maskel Kigon, which I wanted to share with you. He says that if you look in Masechta Erevin, you'll find that Rav Chizda was a Talmid of Rav Huna, and he would never paskin a shaila within the presence of Rav Huna. Even a simple question, you'd ask him a halacha kala with a kuf, and Rav Chizda would still shy away. Rav Huna was considered the Rosh Hashiva, the Gadol Hador. Kolshkein, says Tosfos, that he would not paskin in a Dini Mamanis case, which is a serious issue between Reuben and Shimon, who are litigants in a monetary case, in the presence of Rav Huna. If that be the case, how could it be that the Gemara is talking about a situation in which there are two Batei Dinim in the same city, one is overseen, one is supervised by Rav Huna, and the other by Rav Chizda? How is it possible that Rav Chizda would have a Bezdin in the same city as Rav Huna? So Tosfos answers that the fact that they're in the same city is not the determining factor, but rather there's halach of sheer makom of distance. There's a distance, and that distance is called shalosh parsos. So let's say I'll just throw out a number: it's 5 miles. So within a 5 mile radius, a talmid is not allowed to paskin a horah in the presence of his rebbe. So if both the rebbe and the talmid are within that radius of 5 miles in any direction, then the talmid is enjoined from giving his view and expressing his opinion on a halachic matter. But if the distance between the Rebbe and the Talmud is more than 5 miles, what we call, which in the Gemara's language is called Shalosh Parsos, then it's a whole nother area, a whole nother district. It's not Bifnei Rabbo. So Bifnei Rabbo is that particular radius. So even though both the Rebbe and the Talmud are in the same city, nevertheless, if they're distanced one from the other by this Shalosh Parsos, that shear of Richuk Makom, then the Talmud is permitted to express his view on a halachic shaila. However, in the past, I've quoted one of the Achronim on Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin Ketana, and he has another answer to this question. He claims that there's a difference between Iser Veheter and Dine Momenos. Yesh Lechalek. He says, if we're dealing with Iser Veheter, the Torah says you have to be a Gadol B'Torah in order to paskin on something that could be Aser. And therefore, to paskin in the place of your Rebbe, you're being mezalzel. You're saying I'm greater than he is. Because in Iser Veheter, which is so severe, so strict, we have to get the best halachic opinion and decision that we possibly can. So you're paskining when your Rebbe could paskin, send the shaila to your Rebbe. Avo b'dini momenos, afil gimel hedyotos ksherim ladun. Remember, we're not talking about mumchin, as we said at the outset. We're talking about hedyotos. So these are people from different walks of life that come to sit on the bezdin. It's lahavdil. It's like jury duty in our time. Is then yochol lifsof b'machom rabo? Why? She'eno nirek b'zek himachzik asmo gadol b'torah. He's not making himself into the final authority. I'm going to paskin on a serious issue of Iser Veheter. I'm only getting involved in a dispute in a monetary case, which requires nothing more than gimel edyotos. It doesn't require gdolim and chachamim. Just gimel edyotos. So we have two answers to explain how is it that in one general city, in one location, there was a bezdin of Rav Huna, who's the Rebbe, and a bezdin of Rav Chisda, who's the Talmud. When the Gemara in Erevin says that Rav Chisda would never paskin a shaila at any time Rav Huna was in the vicinity. One answer is to say that we're dealing with a distance of more than Shalosh Parsos, and the other answer is that we're talking about Dini Momenos, which doesn't require a Gadol B'Torah. All it requires is Gimel Edyotos. But if there was a Shail of Iser Veheter, then for sure Rav Chisda would shy away from paskening in the city of Rav Huna. So again, let's go back to our Mishnah. Mishnah is talking, according to the Gemara's interpretation right now, that each litigant will choose a bezdin. And when it says Zebor Lo Echad, it means a bezdin. And the other litigant has a right to veto that choice of a bezdin. So Gemara is not happy with that. Tnan, we learned in our Mishnah, v'chachamim omrim, shnei dayonim borim lehem od echad. It says that two judges will decide on the third judge. We're not talking about which bezdin to go to. We're talking about how to make up the judges in the court. Isal kedaito kidika amrina, and according to your interpretation, that each litigant is choosing the bezdin of his choice, is bezdin. How could it be that each one is passeling a bezdin, and then bezdin basar de passelahu azel uberlahu bezdin achrina? You're telling me zebor elo echad, this litigant will choose his Beis Din, that's his first choice of a Beis Din. The other litigant says, no, I don't want to go to that Beis Din. That Beis Din is possible. And as a result, that Beis Din is nixed off the list. And the same is going to go for the other litigant. Now the Mishnah says, and they're going to decide together on another Beis Din. Who's going to decide on another Beis Din? You just excluded them, and you said that each Baal Din has a right to veto the Beis Din, and now all of a sudden that Beis Din is going to decide on which Beis Din that's these same litigants are going to be adjudicated in that Beis Din. Vetoed, and furthermore, how do you understand the language of the Mishnah? Zeh Borolo Echad, v'zeh Borolo Echad. It sounds like you need to decide on the part of each Baal Din who would be the Dayan. Kach tzorch lios ha-din, shekol Baal Din, borer Beis Din Echad. In other words, if we're explaining in the Mishnah that each one of the Baal Dinim is going to choose a Beis Din, then what does it mean, zeh borolo echad v'zeh borolo echad? You're telling me that, you know, if the other Baal Din wants to passel the Beis Din, which his friend, subpoenaed him to show up in that Beis Din, and then we're going to have to decide on another Beis Din. But then what are you telling me? That if one person would be Misratza, he would be happy with the Beis Din that his friend chooses, then there would be no din of a no reason to be no tzorech for a Beis Din nosaf. I'm not sure I understand this Gemara clearly. Let's just read the answer to the Gemara, then we'll go back to the Gemara's question. Ella, but this is the bottom line of the sugya. And this is the final conclusion about how to read our Mishnah. Hachi kamar, this is what our Mishnah means. Zeh borolo dayan echad. Let's add the word dayan. It's not a reference to a Beis Din, but to a dayan. Zeh borolo dayan echad. Ushneim, and together as a joint effort, borim lahem dayan echad. Oh, dayan. I mean, od echad means another dayan. And this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, Maishna di avdi hachi. Why do they have to do it that way? Why did he choose this method of each litigant deciding what dayan is going to be his dayan of the dayan of his choice? And the Gemara says, "Amri b'marava." The Gemara says that the Bnei Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael explained this speech made the Rabbi Zera in the name of Rabbi Zera. Mitoch shezeh borolo dayan echad v'zeh borolo dayan echad. Ushneim borim lahem od echad yetze hadin lamito, which means that the Balidinim are going to be very satisfied, and they will fulfill whatever the verdict as handed down by Beis Din will require of them. Because even let's say one litigant is found to be chayav, he has to pay. He chose his dayan, and not only that, he also participated in the choice of the third dayan. So he was a major. What do you say?
Contributed
to both, to two out of three of the dayanim. So he can't be dissatisfied with their verdict. And that's true for both Baal Dinim, because each Baal Din chose the dayan of his choice, and each Baal Din had a veto power and required consent in the choice of the third dayan. So let's go back, Rabosai, to understand why the Gemara rejects the original interpretation that each one has a right to choose a Beis Din, and his friend could passel, the other litigant could passel that Beis Din. And the Gemara offers two objections. The first one I think we understood, let's just go over it again. The second one was more complicated, and let's see if we can figure it out. The first objection was that the Chachamim in our Mishnah say that two Dayanim choose a third Dayan. It doesn't sound like we're talking about choosing a Beis Din. It's two Dayanim. Now, if we're talking about a Beis Din, and each litigant, that was the Havamin of Asugya, has a right to veto the other guy's Bezdin, then what does it mean that the two Batei Dinim will choose together the third Bezdin, which would be the choice Bezdin? That doesn't make any sense. You've just established the veto power of each litigant vis-a-vis the choice Bezdin of the other litigant, and now you're going to tell me the two Batei Dinim, the two courts, will now decide on which third court is the one that's accepted? You've just excluded each court. So that much I understand. But then the Gemara says V.O. Now let's see if we can work this out. Because when I saw this morning, I thought I understand Pshat, but now I'm not so sure about it. My, what do we do with the language of the Mishnah? It says Zeb Borelo Echad, the Zeb Borelo Echad. Now again, the Gemara until this point was very satisfied to say that the word Echad referred to Bezdin Echad. So what changes now? What is the Gemara's objection at this point? So let me read to you the Masifta. And it's a long piece, so I'll try to see what we can get out of it. He says the following. Ma'u lashon ha-mishnah zeh borelo echad v'zeh borelo echad shemashma shekach tzorech lios ha-din shekol baldin borer bezdin echad harei lefi ma shebi'arnu kavonas ha-mishnah sherak biofen shekol echad mibali ha-din posal es ha-bezdin shehevi chavero oz tzorech livar bezdin nosaf. So again, if each litigant, according to the Havmin Gemara, rejects the choice of a bezdin of his counterpart, and he has veto power, now what are we saying? That we're going to choose a third bezdin. But the implication is, if the other litigant agrees to go to the choice bezdin of the first litigant, then that's fine. So there's no need. Oh, now I think I have it. The question is whether it's l'chatchila or b'di'evet. Before we see the lashon of the Mishnah, the choice of a third bezdin is really a b'di'evet. It's not the ideal situation. It's only in event that this litigant vetoes the choice of a bezdin of the other litigant. You know, if things were ideal, then the second litigant would agree to the bezdin of the first litigant, or vice versa, they would agree on one bezdin. But the Mishnah says, Zeb borer lo echad, the Zeb borer lo echad. It sounds like the Mishnah is advocating l'chatchila that this is what we should have. And the word echad now in our Hava Mina means bezdin echad. So this one should choose his bezdin, and this one should choose his bezdin? Is that l'chatchila? Is that what the Mishnah is advocating? But if we reinterpret the Mishnah, which is the maskara, the final conclusion, that zeh bor lo echad means a dayan, this is actually l'chatchila. This is the way we construct the bezdin. It's comprised of one dayan that was chosen by this litigant, the other dayan by this litigant, and then a joint decision on the third dayan. Well, let me just see to make sure that he supports this pshat in the footnote. He says the following: Hatana hayitzarich lomar imbirer ze echad v'imbirer ze echad shneim borim lem od echad, which would be mashma that if one chose a bezdin but the other one is not happy about it and the other one chose another bezdin, then they'll have to decide on a third bezdin that's mutually agreeable. Mi lashon zeh mashma shem ira shekol echad posel as bezdin hasheni, in event that each one disqualifies the bezdin of the other litigant's choice, is tzarech, unfortunately, livrar bezdin shlishi, and that's going to have to be decided as a mutual agreement. Midashneya. Ach imlo pasal echad asadayin shechaveru hevi ain tzarech laka. So why would the Mishnah say zev borelo echad v'zev borelo echad? Each one chooses his bezdin. The Mishnah should have said that vehaya, if each one revetoes the other one's bezdin, the choice of bezdin, is then Then we have to go, we have no choice but to go to a third Beis Din and come up with a third Beis Din that's mutually acceptable. So that the way you're interpreting our Mishnah, again the Hava Mina, that Echad means a Beis Din, then it's mashma that logically it should only be, we'd only come to choose, we have to choose a third Beis Din in a scenario in which each one passes the other one's Beis Din. So why does the Mishnah say Zeh Boro Lo Echad? That in order to get a Beis Din, each one should choose a Beis Din. That doesn't make sense, because we don't want each one to choose a Beis Din. We want a choice of a Beis Din, and the other litigant is fine with that. So that's what we have. That's what we have here. Now, let's see if we can finish this up. Let's see. Right, so we said Elohaki Kamar Zeborlo Dayan Echad Zeborlo Dayan Echad Ushneim Borim, the two Bali Din will choose a third Dayan mutually. And the Gemara quotes a memra in the name of Rav Zera that this is a great way of setting up a Beis Din, because each one of the Dayanim will willingly and happily accept the final verdict, because even if the verdict goes against his wishes, against his interests, but nevertheless he was actively involved in setting up this Beis Din. He chose not only one Dayan, but he was involved in choosing the third Dayan as well. Now Tosas Divrei HaMasel Kedei adds another point here to this sugya. He says that Bepashtus Habir who Sheyetze Adin La Mito Mishum Shekolach Et Boro Dayan Echad Ushnei Bal Adinim Boro Es Adayan Ashlishi V'lo Yoser Dayanim Sheyehofchu Lechova Midayanim Shemahavchim Lizchus. So Tosa says that in addition to the happiness of each Baal Din, meaning that we want to satisfy the Baal Din that he'll accept the final verdict and he won't kick up dust, even though he lost the case, there's another advantage of this system of Zeh Borer, and that's in terms of Yotzei Din Lamito. This will be another factor that will push us towards Yotzei Din Lamito, the right decision. Why? Because what we don't want is a Beis Din that's made up of more people who are looking lechova than are looking l'schutz. And I think what he means is that in every case of a dayan, there are different propensities or nature or character traits of a dayan. Some try to look lechova. In other words, they have a natural tendency to favor the underdog, and they want to see if they can be mechayev the one who's this rich mafioso who's claiming that he doesn't owe any money. And others, on the contrary, are mahafkin deschus. They have an atiyah towards always wanting to find that the litigant who's being charged with a financial fee is innocent, and he should be exonerated from that fee. That's called mahafkin deschus. Now, since Dayanim are made up of these two categories or characters, you're always going to be afraid that since we don't have a Beis Din Shokel, that the majority of Dayanim might be this or that. They may either belong to those who are Mahapchim Lechova, or they might be the majority of Dayanim who have that nature that they're inclined towards Schutz. And that's not Din Lamito. You know, you've already stacked the cards, so to speak, in favor of this one or that one, in favor of either the accused or the accuser, depending upon what the most of the... So in order to guarantee that these Dayanim won't belong to this or to that, what you have is each Baal Din chooses his Dayan, and that means that, let's say, the one who is claiming, he's the plaintiff, he's going to choose a Dayan that has a tendency of being Mahapech Lechova, meaning to force the defendant to pay. The defendant, on the other hand, is going to choose a Dayan who has a record of being Mahapech Lezchus, meaning that to defend the defendant. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the third Dayan, where the majority lies, right? Everything lies in the hands of the third jar. What will be his inherent character or his inclination? Will he be a mahapik b'schus dayan or a mahapik b'chovah dayan? And that would change the whole makeup of the Bezdin. So in this case, both the Toveah and the Nitba will agree jointly on the appointment of the third Dayan. So there's no reason to assume that the third Dayan will either fit this category of a Mahapik B'schus or that category of Mahapik B'chovah. Because both of them, the Toveah and the Nitba, agreed mutually to appoint that Dayan as their third Dayan. That's Yotze Din Lamito. So again, just to summarize, we have two advantages of the Zeborer mechanics. One is that each Baal Din has to be happy with the Psak because he chose the Dayanim, meaning two. And number two, it's Yotze Din Lamito as we describe. Just one last point, then I'll let you go. The Rush says that it doesn't mean that the Dayan really is Yachshov Sheyochel Ahatos HaMishpat L'Tovos Misha Biroso. Let's not mislead ourselves into believing that what we're worried about is that if the Dayan was chosen by so-and-so, one of the two litigants, that he will be inclined to tip the scale of the judgment in favor of that litigant who chose him. That shouldn't be an issue that's on the radar screen. Meaning, let's be afraid that if Reuven chose a certain Dayan, Rabbi Dayan, that Rabbi Dayan will be inclined towards Reuven. But rather, that's something that might cross the mind of a Dayan. Of the Baal Din. The litigant might think that, you know what, he chose that Dayan. He probably understood that Dayan would somehow be Machrias Adin Litovaso. The Dayan would not be Mata the Din Litovaso. That's not a correct Svara. But the Baal Din in his mind will think that the reason why my friend here, this other litigant, chose that Dayan is because he's going to tip the scale in his favor. And that's not a good thing. We have to find some way in which each one of the Baal Din will be comfortable and will accept the final psak as a psak emes. And how are we going to do that? By guaranteeing that each one of the Baal Din has rights to choose and equal rights to participate in making up the court. So that's going to be a gewaldige hesed, you know, and a great achievement through the Zebor.
Well, I don't understand that one. Why, if that's the ending of the Shita, so I understand the Chachamim better, in the sense of, why don't we have all three Dayanim chosen by both litigants? If they have the ability to choose one, let's make them choose two others as well. And then nobody has that.
Wait, who are you asking, Kasha, on the Rebbeir or the Chachamim?
I'm asking on Rebbeir. Rebbeir says, A chooses one, B chooses one, and A and B together choose a third Dayan. Yeah. I'm asking on Rameir, if you can get them to choose the third dime, so say they have to choose all three, Dayan. Why not?
Right.
That's my question on Rameir.
Well,
again,
they can't agree on the facts, so they already have. To agree on three different people is going to exponentially make it much more difficult. To agree on one,
right. Also,
it's going to be as hard to find three.
Also, we want to initiate a process. In other words, you know, we can't say, "Well, let's get together the two Baal Din and they'll choose three Dayanim." It's got to be some sort of process where at least we get one Dayan in. So that's Reuven. This Toveah decides on his Dayan. Shimon chooses another Dayan. So already 2/3 of the way there. You know, to start from the get-go and require that both Reuven and Shimon would agree on all three Dayanim. But then on the other hand, if Reuven chose his Dayan, maybe Shimon is going to be suspicious that Dayan is going to be inclined towards Reuven, and therefore they're going to choose jointly the third Dayan.
I understand what Rameir is saying, that, okay, we need to have the third Dayan chosen together. But I said, once you do that, I don't understand why you shouldn't make them do it. Okay.
I say that's already, you know, just in terms of the mechanics or the engineering of it, I think it's really complicated to require that all three Dayanim be chosen by both litigants. You know, let's get to the point where we have two out of the three Dayanim, they're already appointed. And then, according to Rabbi Meir, let the two Balei Dinim agree on a third Dayan, joint decision. That's something that we can hope for. And the Chachamim say no. Once they've chosen two Dayanim, now the Dayanim themselves will choose a third Dayan. So hopefully, you know, this is just to get by the surface of the Gemara. That's what we have. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day. And I just want to add one line. Nobody has to stay for this, but I'm talking to myself here. The Ruki Yosef, he says that Mikevan Shebaldin Birer Es Hadayon Ma'ayin Hadayon Yofeh B'dov. He says that, according to the Ruki Yosef, once he was chosen, this Dayan, by a particular Baldin, he has more of an inclination to be Ma'ayin Yofeh B'dov. Since this process in which the litigants choose the dayanim, the dayan feels more of a mechuyavus, more of a commitment to be slow in judgment, not to come to any rash decisions, and to rethink everything, turn it over in his mind, and not be mezaka this one or be mechayv that one until he really comes to a final conclusion.
I'm curious, in Mitzvahs, how often the third dayan ends up in a minority?
You mean that the two dayanim that were chosen, the two Balei Dinim, are equal? Yeah. You know, one says yes, one says no. You know, it could be that's quite common.
Okay. No, the first two end up in the same corner, and the third.
Well, that can happen too. But I'm just saying, you might have more of a statistical probability that the two dayanim that were chosen respectively by the two Balei Dinim might be divided in their opinions, and we need the third dayan who's mutually accepted to be machuyas.